Welcome back to another edition of American FC. Today we're going to cover all the games from the weekend, and boy, we had some exciting games. We had Arsenal, first off, taking on Aston Villa at home at the Emirates. Now, Arsenal won this game 3-1, but the big talking point of this game for me was Smith Rowe. So Smith Rowe continues to show that he is what Arsenal need. He is what Arsenal is looking for. He is the missing piece. He's valuable to Arteta's project at Arsenal. He had an assist, and he also scored. This guy dictated the field most of the game throughout the first half, and then along throughout the second half too. So this game, Arsenal finished the game only 54% possession at home, but they had 22 shots with 9 on target. So they had a ton of shots. Smith, like I said, Smith Rowe was really dictating the field, was really making Arsenal like really tick and tack, and it just looked like old Arsenal style under Wenger. So, is this the project that Arteta's been talking about? You know, is this the process he's been talking about? Is this what we're finally seeing? Is the process that he always has been saying of trust the process? Is this the process we're getting? Is this the Arsenal that we're going to see going forward? Is Smith Rowe, was he the missing piece now that he's clicking? Is this what Arsenal needed? And for me, in my opinion, I think it is. I think Arteta's had some struggle, you know, towards the end of last season, and he's had some struggle this season, obviously losing, you know, to Brentford on opening day and, you know, going on a 3-game lose streak, being at the bottom of the table. But now Arsenal's clicking. We got Aubameyang scoring goals. Lacazette scored, you know, last weekend to tie the game up, to draw out for Arsenal, which, you know, wasn't a great result, but, I mean, it still shows Arsenal's getting that drive and that fight back. So I think that with Smith Rowe dictating midfield for Arsenal, he kind of feels like that old, like, Jack Wilshere feel. Kind of got, like, that old way that Arsenal played with Thomas Brzezinski. Like, that kind of way that Arsenal played back then. That's kind of, like, the groove I get for Smith Rowe. So, as long as Aubameyang's staying fit and get goals from Aubameyang, and he's, like I said, he's in form now. You know, he's getting goals almost every game. We also got Lacazette getting goals. So, if they can get their strikers to get goals, they got Thomas Partey back in midfield as a center defensive mid. You know, he's back from injury. So Arsenal really look like they could really go strong. And, you know, of course, they're not probably not going to get a top four finish. We all know that. But they could at least finish high mid-table. I'm saying they're probably, you know, probably get like a 7th or 8th planet finish in the Premier League this year. So that's good. You know, that's a really good thing for Arsenal. I think it's good for Arteta. So we'll just have to see where they go. But as of right now, Arsenal's really clicking. And Smith Rowe definitely is the point of that. So let's jump into Saturday games. Saturday had a lot of games. We had Brighton welcome City. We had Chelsea welcoming Norwich. Palace welcoming Newcastle. Everton brought in Watford. Had Leeds and Leeds and Wolves played against each other. We had Southampton welcoming Burnley. So let's start with the Chelsea game at Norwich. So Chelsea welcomed Norwich to Stamford Bridge on Saturday morning, and let's just say Chelsea ran riot, okay? The game ended 7-0. But that what we have to look at, though, is not only did they hammer Norwich 7-0 at home, they did this with no strikers. So no Lukaku, no Timo Werner. So me personally, I was thinking, okay, Kai Havertz will step up. Kai Havertz will be the striker for Chelsea. He'll be the person that leads Chelsea. But boy, was I completely wrong on this. Not only did they get 7 goals, but Mason Mount scored 3 goals. So Mason Mount had a really good season last season, and, you know, towards the end of the season, he had a really good season. And he had a pretty decent season so far, you know, starting off. But now he is just dominating Chelsea again. He's getting back to that form he was at. He's helping Chelsea win games. We're starting to see the old Mason Mount we had last season. So he got a hat trick. We also had Jorginho scoring, which, you know I don't really talk about Jorginho that much. But, you know, Jorginho is the midfield player that Chelsea's pretty much relied on for the last couple weeks, you know, last season and going into this beginning of this season. They've really relied on Jorginho. So, you know, without strikers, Chelsea dominated Norwich. Now, we all know Norwich is at the bottom of the table and Norwich isn't scoring goals and they're struggling. And I know that. But to welcome a team like Norwich, or pretty much any team, and for them to run the riot that they ran, that's what shows that there's no remorse for Chelsea. They do not care how many goals they score. They do not care what the score is. Chelsea is going to continue to fight and push goals. And if they could do the same thing against a bigger team, as in like Liverpool or City or Man United or Tottenham, you know, they could do the same kind of thing there, then it just shows their dominance even more. So, I get Norwich wasn't big, but look at who they play with. And those are, they got Hudson-Odoi, then they had Mason Mount. Those are their goal scorers besides Jorginho getting the penalty. So, no other team in Premier League history has scored this many goals in bunches as like Chelsea does. So, this is the 18th time Chelsea has scored more than 6 goals in a match. And not only that, but Mason Mount becomes the 16th player of the season of a different goal scorer of the season for Chelsea. So that's 16 different players that are scoring for Chelsea now. Now, granted, we did get another goal later on from Chelsea that made it 17 for the season from 17 different goal scorers. But for them to have goals coming from all that on the field is just astonishing. So who needs strikers when they got defenders scoring goals? They're leading the league with 23 goals so far for the season. So they have had the most goals scored. They had the best goal difference. They're getting goals from midfield, from strikers, from defense, from wherever. So we talked about last week that could Chelsea cope with not having Lukaku or Timo Werner both being out injured? And I mean, and the answer is yes. I mean, they can. I mean, we saw this past weekend with midfield. I mean, they've done, Thomas Tuchel's done kind of like what Man City's done and kind of took this midfield into his false nine position. But instead of running kind of like the false nine, he kept the same formation that he normally runs with his 3-5-2 or his 5-3-2. He just allowed the midfielders to push up, and it worked for Chelsea. And in that sense, you know, Chelsea going forward, I mean, they really do look like they might win the league. You know, I mean, I think they're really going to get a fight from Liverpool and possibly even City, but Chelsea just look like they're unstoppable right now. And as long as they stay healthy, I mean, they have nothing to worry about. Like, that team is just, they're going to win. So, next I want to talk about Everton and Watford. So, Everton welcomed Watford to Goodison Park, and Everton was winning the game pretty early on. I mean, they were winning 1-0, then they got 2, then Watford scored, you know, it was 2-1. I mean, the game all looked all but done. You know, Everton, like, they were going to walk away with it, and it was going to be good. But Watford came back and won 5-2 at Goodison Park. So, you know, I know that Rafa Benitez is coming to Everton, new manager this season for them. I mean, I get that, you know, he's got to get his groove going. He's got to understand, you know, he's got to get the team going and getting their stuff the way he wants it to be. But to lose at home 5-2 to a team that just was promoted, to a team that, you know, has a little bit of Premier League experience but not a ton, and you look at being up 2-1 and then you collapse. You know, it asks the question is, what's wrong with the team? What's wrong with the manager? Like, what are we doing in this sense? And for me, I don't necessarily think that Rafa Benitez is a failure. I think that the team's let him down. I mean, you look at being up 2-1 and then you blow that lead to go down to a 5-2 loss. I don't think it's the coach that really was the issue. I think the team just lost what they were doing. But, you know, don't take nothing away from Watford. Now, Claudio Ranieri's first game as Watford manager, we got to remember, he conceded 5 goals to Liverpool. But his second game, he scored 5 goals. So, we knew it was going to take him a little bit to get Watford going. But to only be over Watford for 2 games, and really, you really can't really even count the Liverpool game. Because, I mean, with the form that Liverpool's in, you really can't say that Watford really had much of a chance at home against Liverpool. So, to go to Everton, to be 2-1 down, and to fight back and win 5-2, Claudio Ranieri really shows, like, he wants to win games. And for me, if we think back to 2015, 2016, when he won the title with Leicester, you know, when he was sacked, you know, a lot of people were kind of disappointed in that because they felt like he was kind of wrong done. But my question is, can he do the same thing he done with Leicester that he's doing with Watford? Can he do the same thing with Watford that he's done with Leicester? And, you know, I don't think Watford's going to win the league by any chance, but can he make Watford a top-tier team? can he push Watford up to those high positions like he did with Leicester? You know, he done it with Leicester in one season. So to come in to Leicester and from a team that was almost relegated the season before by they missed it by 1 point, and then to win the league the following season after he took over, I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. So taking over Watford when they were kind of low on the table. Yeah, you played Liverpool, you conceded five, but now you've scored five and you come back from being in a two-one deficit and you win the game at away as well. So Claudio Ranieri really looks to me like he could push Watford up to the top. He could make Watford really push forward. So we're just gonna have to wait and see on that. But for me, like Claudio Ranieri was definitely the decision I think that Watford made that was a good decision. You know, this is the first good manager I think they've had in a long time. So all credit to them. So then we had Newcastle at Palace. So the game ended 1-1, you know, and you know, it was a kind of 50-50 game, wasn't really much in it. But we have to look at, this is the post-Steve Bruce era now. This is without a dominant manager. This is without a manager over Newcastle. They didn't lose the game. But, you know, we have to look at it. It was just a moment of brilliance that actually got Newcastle their goal. I mean, for Callum Wilson's acrobatic overhead strike, there was little to be excited about an unforgettable performance at Selhurst Park. I mean, that's all there really was. I mean, the strike from Callum Wilson acrobatic overhead was fantastic, don't get me wrong, but that's all there really was. I mean, they scraped by at Newcastle, or they scraped by at Palace, and it's kind of like, you know, we look at Palace and we're like, okay, here we go, Vieira getting another draw, but he ain't losing. So for Vieira not to be losing, it's good for Palace, but at the same time, you know, they got to get these wins. But for Newcastle to barely scrape by without Steve Bruce, you know, we got to look at who are they going to bring in? Who are they going to bring in as the manager? You know, I think, honestly, that I thought was going to be Conte. I really thought Conte would be the one that would come there because, you know, he's out of a job. But, you know, that's not looking to be the sheer fact. And, you know, I'll explain that a little bit later, but I don't think that's going to happen now. But Newcastle have got to find a good manager. With the takeover that happened, they got to find a manager. They got to start winning games. They got to get out of that relegation zone. And, I mean, we just got to kind of wait and see. They do have Chelsea up next, so we'll kind of see what they do in that sense. But as of right now, I mean, Newcastle kind of looks shaky. I mean, they got to get a manager in. But Palace, they got to get some wins. Palace has got to get wins. And I just don't know where it's going to come from. But it's got to happen. Next game was Leeds versus Wolves. They welcome Wolves to Elland Road. And Wolves scored pretty early in this game. I mean, they got the goal pretty early in the game, and it all looked like Leeds wasn't really going to get much from it. But Leeds did get a goal on the 94th minute, and it came from a penalty. And for me, I feel bad for Wolves because they couldn't hold on to that last minute, you know, mess up and get the win because they played so well, and I really thought, you know, Wolves had this game in the bag. But to give away a penalty away on the 94th minute of a game, when all you're having to do is basically close this game out, which, don't get me wrong, when Leeds got the penalty, it was a very, very well-deserved penalty. I mean, the dude ran through the midfield. He ran through the line. I mean, the back line, he really made it hard for Wolves not to really foul him. So take no credit away from this, from Leeds getting the penalty. But in the same sense, we look at it and say, you know, why could Wolves not hold on to this lead? Why could Wolves not hold on to this point? And, you know, we saw them come back last weekend at Villa and win 3-2. And so I really thought Wolves would go to this game to Leeds, a struggling team, and just dominate them and get the win, but it didn't happen. So for them, it's kind of a downfall. But for Leeds, I mean, all credit, man. To score a goal, 94th minute, you get the draw. You're still in 17th place, but Leeds have got to get that over that hump, and they got to get back into the sense of where they were last season and being a mid-table team. And I think it's coming. I think Leeds is just in a rut. I mean, Besic being the manager still, we all know Leeds is capable of. We all know he's a good manager, but they just got to get whatever little rut they're in. They got to get out of it, and it's bound to happen. I mean, you're 9 weeks in to the season. I mean, it's coming. I mean, Leeds is going to get what they need to move forward. And same thing with Wolves, too. I mean, Wolves is going to start picking up some wins, we hope. But you know, we just got to kind of wait and see where both teams land towards the end of the season. But right now, I think Leeds is the one that looks more likely to get out of the rut. I think Wolves are going to keep making these mistakes, and as long as these mistakes happen, if these mistakes keep happening, they're not gonna fix it. We had Southampton welcoming Burnley to St. Mary's. That game also kicked off around the same time. Now, Southampton won the weekend before on a 1-goal lead, and Burnley are just coming off a defeat against Man City. So, you know, both these teams are, you know, 18th place. Burnley is yet to win a game. Southampton's in 16th place. They've won one game, which was their game they won last weekend. So I really didn't expect a lot from this game. I expect this game to be very boring. I expect this game to be a 1-0 win to somebody or even a 0-0 draw. The game ended 2-2. And Cornet for Burnley really showed, you know, he got two goals. And he really showed what he was signed for. And we talked about it when they played against City last weekend. Now, Burnley was in 18th place last weekend. And when City came to them, you know, Burnley really took it to City, and City struggled against them. So they played the same kind of counter-attacking mentality they played against Man City with Cornet, and it worked against Southampton. And they got two goals they got one goal, and then the game, they looked like they were all good for the first half, and then Southampton scored. Then Southampton scored again, but then Burnley played this counter-attack, and Cornet got another goal. So, is Cornet the missing piece for Burnley? And the answer is yeah. I mean, I think he is. I mean, the dude can play it right back, left back, midfield, cam, striker. It don't matter. This guy can play all over the field. So, this is what Burnley need to build their team around, in my opinion. I think this guy is somebody that can spark a counterattack, can be the main person of the counterattack, and you know, I think the wins for Burnley will come. Burnley's been up in the Prem now for a couple of years. I don't see them going down. I think that they're just kind of like same thing with Leeds. They're just kind of in a rut. You know, they're at least going to finish in 16th, 15th place. I think they'll be safe this season. But they got to get Cornet as the main focal point of their team. And I think that once their manager realizes that, once they get it started, I think that that will be what happens. So the last game that kicked off on Saturday was Brighton welcoming Man City. So, Man City won this game 4-1. And I want to talk about how Brighton's in fourth place. So, Brighton was in fourth place welcoming third place Man City. Now, Brighton knew going into this game it was going to be hard. I knew Man City going into this game as a Man City supporter that Brighton would probably give City a good run for their money. I mean, Graham Potter, like, hands down credit to this guy. I mean, this guy is just a phenomenal coach. I think he's probably one of the best English coaches in Premier League. So, Man City went in, and they got a goal pretty early. They got a goal at 13th minute with Gundogan scoring. And, you know, it was a little goal. It really wasn't much to it. I mean, they thought it was offsides, but it wasn't. You know, it was a really good goal. Then City got a outrageous spark of a counterattack through Bernardo Silva. And it was played in the Grealish and then fed across to Phil Foden. And then within 3 minutes after that, the ball was ricocheted back off the goalkeeper, landed at Jesus' feet. Jesus took the shot, but it hit back of Foden's foot, went in. Foden now has two goals. City's 3-0 up at 30th minute. Now, to be 3-0 up on the 30th minute, you were basically running riot, you know, against Burnley. But we have to give credit to Burnley because when halftime whistle blew, City was still, they were only 3-0 down against Man City. So when they came back onto the field, the last goal for Man City, their fourth goal, didn't come to the 95th minute. But Burnley was able to get a penalty, which they drew Edison into. And credit to Burnley for doing that, or credit to Brighton for doing that, because Brighton made City struggled the entire 45 minutes after halftime. City couldn't break them down. City couldn't do what they did in the first half. And Brighton really took the game to City. They played counterattacking football. They played tight football. They played pressing football. I mean, they really made City work for what they wanted. And to get Edison to come off his line and get the foul was fantastic. I mean, it really showed what Brighton did. And you know, for me, Brighton drops down to fifth, but for me, honestly, I mean, Brighton, to me, still looks like they're going to compete for your European football next season, or even compete for whatever it may be. I mean, for me, Brighton looks like they'll be the stronger team. I mean, I expect them to finish pretty high this season. And like I said, it's all credit to Graham Potter. I mean, this guy is just an amazing coach. And, you know, I'd love to see him be over Man City one day if Pep, when Pep leaves. You know, I think he'd be a good replacement for Pep. But, you know, that's a different scenario. But all credit to Brighton, man. All credit to Brighton. You know, to lose 4-1 to Man City, I mean, it's a hard defeat, yes. But Brighton can really grow off of this. And Brighton can really make this, can really, like, make this into something more and continue to push forward for what they've been doing. So let's get into Sunday's games. So first game of Sunday was Brentford versus Leicester and West Ham welcoming Tottenham. Now, let's start with West Ham and Tottenham because I feel like this is the game that really needs to be talked about out of these two morning games. So West Ham won this game 1-0 against Tottenham through Mikel Antonio. Now, the game was pretty even, but West Ham really, really took it to Tottenham. And the thing that we have to look at this is saying, Mikel Antonio is 31 years old. He's the number 9. And it's been clear that he has the way he needs to play for, that's the way he should be playing for a while. And he showed it last season, and he's showing it again this season, that he is just lethal when it's in the box. When he's in the box, he's just a lethal man. And I think that it sucks that he's 31 years old, and he's just now, you know, really getting this kind of credit. But all 52 of Mikel Antonio's Premier League goals have been scored from inside the penalty area. Nothing from outside the penalty box. Only Tim Cahill and Chicharito have scored more goals in the competition with 100% than coming from inside the box. So Tim Cahill had 56 when he played, and Chicharito had 53 scored when he played in the Premier League. All from inside the box. So Mikel Antonio was just on a different level right now. He really took it to Tottenham. And West Ham deserved to win this game. So the question comes down to this for Tottenham. What are Tottenham good at exactly? So they've lost to West Ham. And I think they lack an identity under Santo. I don't think that Tottenham really has an identity. I don't think they really know how they want to play. I don't know what they have going on. I mean, now, Nuno's only been at the helm for a few months, while David Moyes has had almost 2 years to really shape West Ham in the way he wants to be. But when Tottenham had Pochettino, they had a system. They had a way. They knew what they were doing. When they had Jose Mourinho, they had a system. They had a way of going. They knew what they were kind of doing. And it's going to take Nuno time to get what he's doing at Tottenham, right? And we all know that. But my thing is, I feel like Tottenham are kind of different every day or every weekend. There's a different way Tottenham plays. There's not really like a set way that Tottenham plays. And that's bad. And that's a bad sense for Tottenham because they have to get a groove going, whether it's Kane playing up top with Son on the left and Moore on the right, whether it's Kane playing as a false nine and Son and Moore playing as the strikers, or if that's Kane and Son playing side by side, you know, they need an identity. They need a way of playing week in and week out and not changing systems and not changing the way they want to do things. And I don't see it happening. I think Nuno has to really sit down and look and sit back and look at this team and say, what are we doing wrong? Why are we not winning games? Because let's not forget, you know, Tottenham started the season very well. You know, they started off with 3 straight wins. So now to be where they sit in the table, you know, they were first place down to 6, and they've lost 4 games. You know, we look at it and say, you know, how'd you go from winning 3 so quickly to losing 3? And then you won 2, now you've lost another one. So they got to get a system together. They got to get a groove together. Is it going to come? It's going to definitely come, and we know that. Tottenham's been a top 5, top 6, top 17 for last year, couple years. You know they're not going to be anywhere. They're pretty much part of the big 6 now, or big 7, whatever you want to call it. But they've got to get life under Nuno under control. They've got to get going underneath Nuno Santos, and I think it's just a matter of time before it actually clicks and actually happens. But people have to understand that he's only been over Tottenham since the summer. He didn't really make many signings during the summer. You know, he had the whole transfer saga with Kane leaving. So, until he gets his system right, Tottenham are going to have up and down games. And that's with any team. That's with any team. Not just Tottenham. It's with Arsenal. We've watched it with Mikel Arteta. We've watched it with West Ham before when David Moyes first took back over. We watched it with Leicester when Brendan Rodgers took over. It takes time, you know, and we're seeing it Man United with Ollie. I mean, we're seeing teams struggle with coaches. And like, look at Man United. I mean, they've had Ollie for 3 years and they're still struggling. So it's going to take time, but Spurs will get back to where they were. But credit to West Ham, man. Credit to Mikel Antonio being 31 years old, stepping up for his team, getting a goal. You know, West Ham look like they're probably going to have another strong finish this year. Might even be in Europa League again next season or even higher. We'll have to wait and kind of see, but definitely credit to them. Other game that kicked off that day was Brentford versus Leicester. And, you know, for Brentford and Leicester, you know, I expect this game to be kind of even out match for the most part. But Tielemans. Let's talk about Tielemans in midfield. So this is the second week in a row that Tielemans has scored a banger from outside the net, from outside the penalty box. So, I mean, two weekends, two straight wonder goals. It's just astonishing. So, Tielemans this season has really stepped up. I think he's really became like the Leicester midfield. But, you know, credit to Brentford getting a goal back. And then we look at new boy Daka coming in for Leicester. Now, Daka didn't get the goal, but he got the assist that won Leicester the game. So, my question is to everybody is, is this Deka's time to shine? Because we have to look at it and they say Jamie Vardy's old. You know, Jamie Vardy's getting up there. And, you know, he was subbed on at halftime. And, you know, Jamie Vardy's been a huge servant to Leicester. We've watched, you know, Jamie Vardy win the league with Leicester. He became the top goal scorer last season or season before last. He's broke the record for being the only player to score 12 consecutive games. I mean, he's done a lot for Leicester since he's come. But with Vardy getting older, being 31, 32 years old, and Daka being the new boy on the bench and the new boy, the new young person, and coming off a 4-goal scoring frenzy in Europa League, this is his time to shine at Leicester. This is his time to step up. This is his time to show Brendan Rodgers that, hey, I can be what Jamie Vardy's been to this club, and I can be the goal scorer that you're looking for. Because I don't really feel like Iheanacho is the one that's going to do that. I don't feel like, you know, they don't want to have any other option in the striker. I mean, they got Amari Gray, but, I mean, what's he really doing? So, for Vardy, you know, they've always really relied on him. So, now that Vardy's getting older and he's kind of slowing down, and it's not really looking like Vardy anymore, you know, they need someone's going to do that. And Daka, to me, seems like he's going to be that Vardy replacement. I mean, still early in his career at Leicester. Still early in his whole groove. But, you know, we'll see where he stands. But for me, Daka definitely is who Leicester need to focus on. They need to get this dude playing game in and game out constantly. They need to get him on the score sheet. They need to get him going. They need to start building this team around Daka, because it's going to become life without Jamie Vardy eventually. It's just a matter of time. And I think them signing Daka was a good investment. I think this was what they needed. And I think this is where they're going to be going forward is with Daka. So now on to the big game of the weekend. We had Man United bringing in Liverpool. Now, a lot of people had this game pegged to be United win or a draw. You know, two big heavyweights going head-to-head. I had this game either being a 3-0 win to Liverpool or at least a 3-1, maybe a 3-2 to Liverpool. Still, Liverpool's going to win this game. Liverpool ran riot at Old Trafford. They won this game 5-0. Now, not only did they win this game 5-0, but they handed Ronaldo his second biggest defeat in his career. They handed Mo Salah a hat trick, which makes him the only player other than R9 Ronaldo to score a hat trick at Old Trafford. And on top of all that, it now puts so much pressure on Ollie is his time at United finally up? Me personally, I think his time's been up. Don't get me wrong. But at the same point, being a rival fan and other people, you know, I got Ralph friends, you know, with Liverpool friends and Chelsea friends, you know, we all like Ollie, being over United because, you know, they struggle and it's good for us. But Ollie has been needing to go for a long time, and I think United fans are finally starting to do that and see that even more. And, you know, we talked about who they might bring in if he gets sacked. And I think it's going to be Conte. I really do. I think it's going to be Conte. You know, we thought it was going to be Zidane. You know, I thought Zidane would go to United. Conte would go to Newcastle. But I think Conte is going to go to Man U. And they talked about it over. And just this morning, they've been talking about how he's ready for that job. He wants that job. And I think it's just a matter of time for the board does it. Do I think the board's going to do it? In a way, yes. Do I think that you're going to go through with it? Probably not. You know, we've seen United have Ollie for 3 years. They haven't really done much with them since. As long as they're getting Champions League football, they're pretty much content with that. But you had fans walking out of Old Trafford yesterday. You had Pogba coming onto the field in the sixth, in like the 55th minute. He got red card immediately. United were just down and out. United were just destroyed during this game at from Liverpool. And to lose that big to a rival team, to allow what happened to happen, you have to say to yourself, and the owners need to say to themselves, is it's time for a change. And if they don't make this change, then it just goes to show that they're just content with what they got. And Man U, we all know, used to be a very dominant team. And I expect them to be back to being that dominant way at some point. But to be at home and have 36% possession, to only have 4 shots on target, to get beat 5-0, to allow a player to score a hat trick, which has never happened, to be shut out at home for the first time in your history, the questions are starting to be asked of Ollie, of the owners, of United in general. Like, United's at Old Trafford used to be a terrifying thing for all teams. It used to be a theater of dreams, which is hard to go to, hard to go there and win, hard to be there, hard to be in the atmosphere and do that. Just like how Anfield is for Liverpool. And so for teams to go there, like, you know, Liverpool going there yesterday and winning 5-0. City went there, you know, 10 years ago when they won 6-1. Leicester's been there and they've won. You know, we've seen teams win there now, and the question is, the theater of dreams is no longer a theater of dreams. It's a theater of nightmares for United, and I think United plays better away than they do at home now. So my question for you, or for the owners, would be, how much more are you willing to take before you sack Ollie? How much more are you willing to endure your fans through before Ollie's gone? Who are you looking at to bring in? And I think that Conte will be the one that comes in now. I mean, he wants the job. There are other candidates, obviously, that are in question. So we got, let's go through them. We got Conte that's in question. Zidane's in question. Brendan Rodgers could be in question, but I don't really see him leaving Leicester. I mean, that'd be really hard. We got Erik ten Hag. He's a Dutchman. You know, he could come in. He's over PSV right now, but once again, I don't think that's a really good position. I think they need an experienced coach. They don't need somebody who plays in a smaller league in the Netherlands. I think they need somebody who plays in a big league. We also got Luis Enrique, but once again, you know, I don't really see that being a big call. Luis Enrique is over Spain. I don't really see him wanting to come to United. Why step down from national team level to come to a team that's struggling right now? So it really comes down to two. You got Conte and Zidane. So I'm going to say that Conte's probably going to be the one that comes. We'll have to kind of wait and see how this plays out over the next week or two. But I'm willing to bet that if Ollie's not gone by the end of this week, I'd say he's got about 1 or 2 more games to really turn United around, or he's going to be gone. And I think Conte will be the first choice that United brings in. So, and like I said, could be wrong with all this. It's all speculation. But, you know, as of this morning, the reports I was reading this morning, you know, from ESPN and the BR football report and just different reports that are coming down this morning, you know, Conte's ready to take the job now. So it's all up to the owners and Ollie to decide if they want to part ways, if Ollie gets sacked, if he wants to resign. You know, it all falls down on that. So we'll have to wait and see. But for me personally, I think that Conte is going to probably be the one that ends up going to United. But it could be Zidane still, so we'll have to wait and just kind of see how that plays out. But that's all I got for this weekend on this weekend's games. We do have League Cup games coming up midweek. And then we have next weekend games. So just to give you guys kind of a rundown of what's going on, we got League Cup games. We got Arsenal welcoming Leeds. We got Chelsea and Southampton. Queen Park Rangers versus Sutherland. We got West Ham welcoming City. Burnley versus Tottenham. Leicester and Brighton. Press North End welcome Liverpool. Stoke City welcoming Brentford in League Cup. And then the weekend we go into Man City welcoming Palace. Leicester versus Arsenal, which should be a really good game. We got Burnley against Brentford, which should be a really good game. Liverpool will continue their dominance at Anfield, welcoming Brighton. We got Newcastle and Chelsea, so we're going to see if Newcastle have an owner by next week or have a new manager by next week as they welcome Chelsea. We got Watford, who started off in good form, welcoming Southampton. We got the big game on Saturday next week with Tottenham bringing in Man United. Both teams are struggling. Ain't no telling which one's going to win yet. I haven't really made my predictions on that yet. That would be kind of a midweek thing. We'll kind of see where we stand on where my predictions will be. But that would be a fun game to watch. Sunday's games, we got Norwich versus Leeds and then Villa versus West Ham. And then going into Monday next week, we could welcome Wolves welcome Everton. So we got some big games this coming weekend. Then after that, we go back in the Champions League games. But thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of American FC. And we'll talk soon.